This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 89-year-old Albert Metzger of Fresno, California, a decorated B-24 gunner who served with the 389th Bomb Group in Europe, completing 30 missions between May and November of 1944. That's 30 missions in just 6 months overseas. Among his early missions, a D-Day bombing run. And to put that in perspective for you, he talked about how many planes were in the sky and ships at sea. Just with the bombers, not even counting the American fighter planes, more than 1,700 American bombers dropped close to 3,600 tons of explosives on June 6, 1944, at the start of that Normandy invasion. You talk about massive. That is mind-blowing. We've heard about close calls, some lighthearted moments too, the unexpected joy of finding his older brother Adam on the same base he was assigned to in Hethel, England. But what about the end of your time in the Air Corps? What was it like to come home? You'd lost your father before you went over. You know your brother's still over there, but you come home, I imagine you got to see your mother before too long. Do you remember what that was like?
Oh, I remember all of them were down there at the train station when I pulled in, see if I was still all there. You know? But I'll always remember that. The only bad thing was I never got to see my dad after he took me down there. That he had passed away before I even got to see him. So, but my mother and my brother that took care of him, I give him a lot of credit to stay home and take care of her.
Let me ask you a few more questions about all that. One, you know, people today and your grandchildren and great-grandkids, unless they hear you talking about it, probably what they'll know about World War II is what they read in some history book. Maybe they'll get a little bit. But living in that time period, did you have a sense of why you guys were doing what you were doing? What was at stake or what you were hoping to accomplish?
Well, we were trying to stop what they started to do to us. That's what we were after. That's why everybody went in as soon as they could to try to stop this. That made you easier to go in and do something for your country. And that's why I went in.
And you came home, if my math is correct, you're only 20 years old when you came home?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're 20 years old and you've survived 30 bombing missions in a B-24 over Europe in some of the hairiest times of the war. How different were you when you came back? Did that grow you up a little bit?
Sure it did, but I remember I had a sister that she shook all the time. When she'd drink coffee, she'd spill it. I remember when I got home, I was the same way. I'd hold a cup of coffee and I'd shake. What brought that on, I don't know. And right now, I take a depression pill. Now, whether that caused it, I don't know.
And that's something I don't think, you know, we hear more about it now with the guys that are coming home now. But it seems like from everything I've been told by the hundreds of veterans that I've talked to, that when you guys came home, you were just expected to have it all together and get to work and do something. But that might not have been so easy, it seems like.
No. I met my wife pretty quick, and I knew that's the one I wanted. I worked at a packing house when I first got home. And there was a lot of veterans working at the packing house because jobs was a little different to get.
So you were already home and had been home when the war ended, right?
Yes, I was home already, yeah.
But I imagine that still had to be a pretty special day for you. Do you remember what that felt like to realize this huge effort that I was a big part of is finally complete?
Yes, I sure. I know one thing, I thanked the Lord when I was home that I didn't have to go out no more. And I was still worried about my brother, but that it was over with for me. And that was a blessing there.
For people that live in Fresno now, and it's a lot more people that live there now than lived there then, was there a celebration? Did people go out in the streets and cheer? What was it like in Fresno when the war was over?
Well, I think we went and did a little drinking that day to celebrate it. Everybody was just, you know, everybody was happy. Everybody was glad it was over with.
I mentioned your grandchildren a moment ago. What do you think is important for them, for future generations of Americans, to know about you and the guys that you served with and the millions of Americans who won World War II?
Well, I'll tell you what. One of my sons went into the Coast Guard. I got a nephew that was under Ronald Reagan, went into Afghan two times. And they know about it, too, just like I do, what it's like to be in World War II, what I went through and then what they went through. So I'm just proud of them too, just like I am of all the rest of the veterans.
Well, we're proud of you. And I have a few more questions for you, but while we're on that topic, I just want to say thank you for serving. Thank you for telling us about it. I know some of these things aren't easy to discuss. We talked about the fighters. We talked about the FLAC. A lot of other guys that served on bomber crews have also mentioned that sometimes weather was a problem. Do you ever remember that?
Well, yeah, a lot of times you couldn't fly, especially over in England. A lot of days, rain and stuff, you couldn't fly, which I liked. Because then you got to go to town on Liberty. Uh-huh. So I liked that part of it, but the weather was always bad over there.
How did the British people treat you?
Very good. Very good. They were good people, I thought. And their military was good, too. See, they did night flights, where we did day flights. And I give them guys a lot of credit to be up there by themselves flying them night flights.
It had to be pretty eye-opening for a teenage kid from Fresno to get overseas and see all this part of the world that you never even dreamed of before, huh?
That's right. I went into London, got to see the Bell. The experience was great. I mean, I got to see a lot of stuff.
Can you give me a sense of what your relationship with your crew was like, what the other guys were like, and how you got along with them, how much you guys grew to know each other or how you depended on each other?
We did. You got real close with the guys. They seemed like brothers to you because you slept together, you ate together. We all knew about each other because you always talked about that. It just was like we were brothers.
What was, you mentioned when you guys had to land at the B-17 base and you had the spirited arguments with the B-17 crews. So give us your argument. Why was the B-24 a superior airplane? What did you love about that Liberator so much?
Well, the difference between them two planes was, an example, if you was to land in the channel, if you wouldn't make it back and land in the channel, a B-17, the wings were on the bottom, and they had 15 minutes to get out of that plane because it floated better. But the B-24, our wings was on top with that big belly hanging down there, and we had like 4 or 5 minutes to get out of that thing. That was the difference on them two planes. So I liked the 24. It was a good plane.
Well, it seems too, if you said that you guys took flak on just about every mission, and there are plenty where you saw fighters as well, even losing engines at times. Sounds like it was a pretty durable airplane.
It was. It was a good plane. It took its knocks, but it took care of us.
It's been a long time since the war. I mean, we're almost to the 70-year mark from the end of the war. In all those years, have you been around B-24s since then? Have you had some of those feelings rush back when you see that profile?
They had a B-24 come in here, and you could get on there for $300, and my boy won. They wanted me to get on there and fly, but I didn't go. Because I'll tell you why. I've been on one airplane since I got out of the service. Me and a wife, we flew back to Florida, and I didn't like it. I couldn't even look out the windows, and I haven't been on one ever since then. So I don't know what's going to happen when I get on that other one.
Yeah, we want to get you to the World War II Memorial with Honor Flight. Do we need to have a window like a waist gunner or what?
My wife sat at the window, but I wouldn't look out. And I didn't like when it landed. It felt like we were going to just flop right down and hit the. I didn't like it. I've been on one plane since all them missions I flew, all them air miles. And I didn't like it, and I haven't been on a plane since then.
And it's all because of what you experienced in the war?
I guess so, because I wouldn't even go on that 24 when my boys wanted me to go. They begged me to go. They want to pay everything, but I didn't go. I couldn't go.
Yeah, well, and I think it's important that you share that with us so we understand that there are lasting effects of what people like you were put through for our sake all those years ago. Speaking of Honor Flight, we want to get you there to Washington, D.C. in the World War II Memorial. They have at that memorial a wall of gold stars, and it represents the 405,000 Americans who died in World War II. What does that mean to you? Do you ever say, I could have been one of those? And what does that leave you feeling?
Sure. Every time you went out on that tarmac to get in that plane, you didn't know whether you were going to come home or not. I could have been one of them. I was lucky. God was with me, and I was lucky to get home. I feel sorry for all them guys, really. But what can you do? It's all over with now.
Well, I mentioned that you and Donna are going to celebrate your 67th anniversary this year. Tell me the story of how you met that lovely lady. Were you here in Fresno?
Yeah, I was in Fresno, and I worked at a place where a girl worked there, which I got friendly with, a nice girl. And she was the best friend of my wife, Donna. So she introduced me to Donna. And we went out. In fact, about the first, second time I seen her, I thought to myself, boy, that's the one for me. And it is. And I'm lucky, and lucky I got her, because she is my soulmate.
What do you think has been the secret to your success for staying married for all these years?
I think it's her.
You just picked the right one?
I picked the right one is right. And I cherish, I just love my wife, really.
And I can see it in your eyes that that's an absolutely true statement. You mentioned that you felt you were lucky, that God was looking out for you. When you think back on that now, what you survived in World War II, coming home at age 20, and now here you're going to be 90 in May, so 70 years after you came home, all this life you've been able to lead since then. What are you most thankful for, and what are you most proud of?
I'm proud I served my country, did the best I could, and I'm glad I'm home, and I'm home safe, and I got a wonderful wife, and wonderful kids, and grandkids, and that's what I'm thankful for.
Well, I mentioned Honor Flight and the possibility of going back to Washington, D.C. and seeing that memorial to your generation, to the 16 million Americans who served in World War II. I mean, it might seem like a no-brainer to people that you'd want to go, but maybe you can tell me. Why is that something that you would like to do and something you'd like to experience?
Well, I'd like to go back there and see all the names on that wall. I've never been back there. I'd be proud to go back there and see all that.
And you told me no one from your crew was ever injured, but I'm sure you were around a lot of other crews. There are a lot of guys that you interacted with here and there. You told us about Jimmy Stewart coming to your base and all that. Were you ever in a situation where someone you knew did not come back from a mission or was shot down or that you had to deal with that loss or separation?
Well, there was a couple of guys in another barracks that we knew that their plane went down and they never come back. I remember one kid that had flown 29 missions, and on the 30th mission, he was sick and couldn't go on that 30th mission. And that plane was shot down that day. Wow. And so he was around that base for about a year and wouldn't take that 30th flight, and he could have went home anytime he took it. So there was a flight coming up. It wasn't even a mission to bomb. It was to go over and check the weather and stuff. So he decided to go on that. That was a milk run. And he got on that, and they hit plaque, and he had his heel tore off by a piece of plaque on his 30th mission. Wow. But he went home without a heel. That's how things happen.
And how things can mess with your head and get inside. What about for you? When you prepared for that 30th mission, knowing that it would qualify you to come home, were you a little anxious about it?
Oh, yeah, everybody. We knew this was the last one. If we get back out of this one, we're headed home. We all looked for that one.
And you would make it back unharmed physically. You mentioned some of those mental and emotional challenges that it did leave with you, and you're not alone in that. It's important for the rest of us to understand how much you've been through. Mr. Metzger, I just want to say again, thank you for serving our country. If you at home would like to see some photos from Mr. Metzger's time in the Army Air Corps, we have quite a gallery up on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. His entire bomber crew, an article from the Fresno newspaper about the coincidence of the two brothers meeting up on that same base in England, and even the certificate he received after completing those 30 missions. You might get a kick out of the crudely named club that made him a member of. Go check that out on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Thanks for spending the hour with us today. Until next time, I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.